Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It might be morning where you're listening from, but chances are it's probably evening. Might be late evening if you're on the East Coast, but it's certainly coming up on evening my time. Thus, I will say good evening. For the Gentleman's World episode, this is the first episode that we're recording that will go directly on our new host, Anchor. We're going to be using Gentleman's World to kick the tires on Anchor, give it a shot, see if it's going to meet the long-term vision and goals for Gentleman's World podcast. And I don't think it should change the experience any. From what I can tell, it's a more visually appearing, visually enticing, I'll say, experience. I've not had any concerns so far. There were a little bit of hoops, but we got past those, and I've tested the migration. All episodes have moved over correctly. All the links have updated. If you're listening in from Spotify or iTunes, those are automatically up to date, or they should be. I'll need to double verify iTunes again, but I'm pretty sure it's linked correctly. You may see on episodes that it asks you to subscribe through Leister.substack. That does still work if you want to do that. However, we'd like it if you were to subscribe directly through your podcast application of choice, or if you use iTunes or Spotify, one of those platforms. Anchor, I believe, does have a subscription function, but it's not quite the same. So however you choose to do it should not be changed. If you do have any concerns or any issues accessing the podcast entry today, please do access our site, cryptotalkradio.net. Leave us that feedback. There's a contact us form at the very top, and we would love to hear from you because we do want to make sure that it's a positive experience, even if I'm not necessarily telling positive stories. Speaking of not quite positive stories, you know, I've years ago, back when I was a teenager, fresh out of high school, and I was getting my first jobs, I got some advice from multiple people, people that were from my parents' church or my mom's church and people from, you know, city council people and all sorts of people that were trying to give advice because everybody had a different opinion about how to get into the workplace. And of course, I got my first job when I was 18. So it at that time was not nearly as difficult as it is now to get into work, mostly because there was not this heavy reliance on the internet in order to do the hiring. We didn't have this ATS where they're auto screening your resume and then kicking you out if you don't meet certain requirements. And for the most part, you sent a PDF of your resume in and a human looked at it and then they determined whether they're going to contact you and then they give you an offer on the phone and then you're good to go. Now there's all these hoops because they don't really want to hire you. And of course, with the pandemic, it's even worse. They don't really want to hire anybody during the pandemic and then they'll complain they can't find the workers they need. And the truth is they don't really want to hire those people because those people want more out of the employer. They want more money. They want to work from home. All these things we take for granted that could be a thing they don't want to give. And so it's this tug of war. And so I got to thinking, you know, I've talked to many companies and as it gets worse and worse and worse, one thing I've noticed and was feedback I heard before, and I didn't resonate because I thought it was not the right answer. I was always told, you know, don't over offer, don't over put yourself out there. You know, you don't have to lie, but just don't over give, right? When you're talking about your history or what got you there and answering this. And then so basically what I was told is to follow the echo chamber, bow down to the master, do whatever they tell you to do just to get the job. I've never supported that stance. I refuse to support that stance. And frankly, it got me thinking, basically every employer wants you to lie to them to make them feel good. It's an ego trip. And I've yet to find any company, whether it's contract or full-time, any single company period that's future state. They're thinking future. They're thinking, no, I want somebody that's going to come in here and shift us up. We're all jacked up. We know we're jacked up. We're not making the sales we need, or we're not making our customers happy, or we're not growing at the rate we want, or something's not working right. We know that we need a go-getter to get in here and fix this. And we know that person's personality is not going to be what we expect. No employer wants that. They want the, I want you to lie to me. Think about the questions you get asked. If you were applying for a job right now, what are the questions you're asked? Where are you working right now? You know, what's your reasons for leaving? What's the salary you want? The same old questions. Okay, and then you get past this, and then it's, okay, well, you know, talking about what's your history and what got you to this point and why did you leave that job and all this stuff, and they want you to lie. Because if you tell the truth, what happens is they'll make an assumption. And when they make an assumption, they don't talk it through with you. They'll just cut you off. They won't talk it through to say, let's deeper understand what happened. So let's say, for example, that you chose to leave a job because you were sexually harassed. So you say, I had a bad interaction with one of the managers and I chose to leave. They're going to take that as, oh, this person's disruptive. We don't want them here. When the truth is, no, you left because you were trying to keep yourself safe. And that's the honest truth. And you just didn't, it's not their business why the specifics that you left, but they're trying to get the specifics. Knowing they're essentially getting close to breaking the law because they're just trying to disqualify you. I covered that on a past episode. Their goal is to disqualify you. And so they're trying to dig. They're trying to hunt, witch hunt for anything they can do to disqualify you and stay within the bounds of the law. So then you have to lie. Well, you know, I chose to do new horizons or get new opportunities or new challenges or some other lie. It might be a partial truth, but it's not the total truth. If you were sexually harassed, that's what happened. But they don't need to know that. It doesn't matter. Because the other thing is, if you told them I was sexually harassed, guess what happens? They're going to assume that you're a troublemaker. You're a disruptor. Let's say that you chose to leave because you wanted more money. You're just straight up, I just wanted more money. They're going to say, oh, this person's going to be priced out and they're going to disqualify you. They don't want to negotiate and say, we understand you had some challenges with salary. Give us your salary requirements. We'll give you what we can meet and let's see how we can negotiate and meet you halfway. They don't want to do that either. So it's always the situation where they put it on a pedestal and they don't want to work with you. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to negotiate with you. And they don't want to hear the truth about what happened, even when you're trying to soften the truth a little bit so that you don't put too much out there. They still don't want that. They want you to lie to them. There are people out there that are happy lying to people just to get stuff done. I don't knock your hustle, but I'm not a fan of lying or even having to lie just because these people are so insecure that they can't handle the truth. And that's kind of, I wouldn't want to work for you anyway. So when I'm thinking about these questions, right, in the hiring process, and the most notorious one, of course, is why'd you leave your past job? Or are you still working or whatever? They're trying to dig into your current situation, even though it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, the reason you're in front of them is because you know that you can add value to them today. So your skills are relevant to them. And the conversation should be, we have this business problem. Talk us through how you would solve our business problem. We don't care about your past. We care about the present. We care about the here and now. Luther Vandross, they don't want to hear any of that. They always want to talk about the past so that they can find something to disqualify you with. So I've experienced this multiple times. And there are times when I'm straight up and it's like, it is what it is. And then they move forward. And then there's times when I'm straight up and they're like, oh, well, we're going to disqualify you because we thought you were negative about your last job. And I've seen a number of people on like LinkedIn, for example, say the same thing. They got a feedback that they were being negative about a past employer when they weren't. They were straight up honest and they just got, there was an assumption drawn. Now let's take it a step further. When this happens, not only do you get disqualified, but in their ATS, they'll just straight up blacklist you as a duplicate. So they'll basically say, they don't revisit it and say, you know what, at this time, this is the feedback that manager had, but there's another position over here. That manager is totally different. That manager doesn't care. So let's call that person back in because HR thought they were a good fit overall, and HR had a different impression than the hiring manager. What does that tell you? That tells you that HR was actually listening to the feedback and management was trying to disqualify. So since we know that, how about we keep that person, actually follow what we say, practice what we preach, right? Barry White. And we go and say, hey, manager B, you're different than manager A. You don't care about the past. You care about the future. Do you want to talk to this person? We just screened them and we thought they were a good fit, but the manager, hiring manager over here didn't like this thing from the past. Manager B is like, bring them on in. Deep, deep, deep. And then now you get an opportunity. They don't do that. Why would you do that? Because it's more efficient. You would save money. You would save time. Your reputation improves. So then when I see on Glassdoor, as an example, all these negative reviews that talk about the hiring process is jacked up and they discriminate and they're not diverse and all this stuff, and then the employer comes out and they put out an article on fastcompany.com talking about, we don't know why we're being rated negative in our diversity. We're a very diverse company. You clearly can't be because, number one, you got people that are openly, it's a pattern. You see multiple people saying the same thing. You got diversity issues. You turn people down when it doesn't make any sense. You don't seem to want to hire certain ethnicities. You don't seem to want to hire certain genders. You got a problem there and you're deflecting. You're blind. You're in the bubble. You don't want to acknowledge it. And instead of fixing it, which is, you know what? Maybe we need to stop doing that. Maybe we need to stop letting these managers in our company do this type of thing. And then the leader doesn't want to do it. And I said it before, ages ago. If you got these kind of cultural issues where your hiring managers, your low-level hiring managers, probably only paid $90,000 a year, are making these drastic decisions that are harming your company, they're harming your reputation, where you are perceived as not diverse and not inclusive, and you don't care, and then at the top somebody tells you, oh, we're inclusive, look, we got that one black person in the corner. You as a leader, the buck stops with you, dude or lady. If you know that you can look at the data and you can see that, you know what, we've turned out an awful lot of women and we've turned out an awful lot of Hispanic and we've turned out an awful lot of black people and we've turned out an awful lot of in favor of Asian and white, you got a problem. Regardless of what that HR person says, look at the data yourself. Look at it yourself and make your own conclusion and then challenge them. Then why is it statistically skewing that you do not hire African Americans, Hispanics, and women? What? Explain to me why that is. Well, because they didn't answer the interviews we want. Maybe our interview questions are jacked up. Maybe our interview questions are designed to disqualify women, Hispanics, African Americans, short people, LGBTQ. Maybe our questions are designed to discriminate against those people and you are practicing unconscious bias. Leader, that's your job to identify where that's happening. Because I promise you, if you got hiring managers who can't seem to make up their mind to make a committed hiring decision against the best talent, that's what you got, is a diversity problem and a discrimination problem, especially when you get those people on the phone and you're all happy to talk to them and you're excited to move them forward and everything sounds great. And then you get them on video and all of a sudden things change. What changed? The fact that you saw a body all of a sudden. What can that only mean? We can only go off what we can see. What we can see is that you are clearly discriminating for one reason or another. Leader, your job is to fix that. If you don't, guess what? You'll never find the right talent, and we don't want to hear you talking about you can't find the workers you need because you're purposely disqualifying the workers you need, the people who will get you up on the right level of the deck. So as I'm thinking this through and I'm realizing that it's endemic. I hate using that word, but it is. It's endemic. Almost every company does the same thing. The leadership does not want to take accountability for the fact that they're low level and their HR is actively disqualifying people that are otherwise perfectly qualified people. They are discriminating. We know this to be true. We don't know how they're discriminating. Could be they're discriminating because they don't like your hair. Could be they're discriminating because they don't like your tats. Could be they're discriminating because they don't like your piercings. Could be they're discriminating because of your skin. Could be they're discriminating because of your gender. Could be they're discriminating simply because they don't like the color of your eyes. We don't know. But we know there must be discrimination if you look on paper and you see a candidate who is an absolute superstar, who worked for your competitor or worked for your close partner, and you refuse to hire that person simply because they chose to leave a company in the past for whatever reason they chose, and that's your reason? Well, you know, you're very intelligent, y'all, but the way you left that company, something that doesn't even matter, because it should be the here and now, Luke Vandross. It should be here and now. What can you do for us now? What have you done for me lately, Janet Jackson? So as I'm processing all this and I'm realizing that it's endemic and it's not part of any one company, it's just society in general. And I know that it's coming from the colleges. I know the colleges are kind of promoting that narrative to some degree. Some of it's coming from training, like internal training, because person A is there and they train somebody else to do it that way. And then that person leaves. So now person B and person C continue that same trend of discriminatory screening. And I question, well, what's the solution? What's the way around it? And most of society has already answered the question for me. It is the great resignation, because we're seeing people that are tired of it and they're leaving. They're actively leaving. What we're not seeing, even though the media says otherwise and the news says otherwise, they're lying, because I know it's the truth that they're lying. What should be happening is, you know what? We're going to stop discriminating. We are going to we're going to hire the first person who meets our needs, not sit and wait for 3 months to try to find perfect. We're going to stop requiring, I actually saw in the news, it's right here in front of me, out here in Nevada. So there's a shortage of teachers. And primarily the shortage of teachers is self-imposed, because what happened here out in Nevada, they went all in with the Biden threat and threatening Americans, you know, come on, man, and the whole thing. So then they threatened, okay, you got to, not only do you have to jab your stuff in your arm, but you got to also wear a mask, you got to social distance, got to do this, got to do that. And they turned it into a banana republic. So then what happens? The teachers revolt and they're like, screw this. We're not doing it. So we're not coming to work. Well, now they have a crisis, because now you don't have anybody to educate those students. Now, of course, the problem is finding new ones is more difficult than it should be, because trying to be a teacher requires essentially, or had required, a college degree, specific college degree, specific length of time, specific duration of work. They had all these. And here's the thing. I'm not suggesting that certain teachers should not have college degrees. I think a chemistry teacher should absolutely have a college degree. I think a trigonometry teacher should absolutely have a college degree. But if I'm teaching Spanish, no. What the heck for? I could teach Spanish. I know Spanish. I've done enough Spanish. It's in my background. I could do it. I don't want to, but I could. So what they said is, okay, we got an emergency here. We got to react. We got a crisis. So what we're going to do is we're going to temporarily drop that requirement and say we need some subs. All you need to have is a high school diploma, which I think is brilliant. We just need to make sure that, you know, what it is that you're teaching and just make sure that it's clear where it's a temporary thing. We got extreme staffing shortages and we got to get this done. But think about it. Why are we reacting that way? Why are we resorting to such extremes? Because the hiring process is jacked up. That's why. Because there are too many requirements. They're purposely trying to disqualify people. And because you try to disqualify people, people are getting fed up and they're not playing the game. They're not jumping through hoops. And I'm proud of them, Hercules, for not playing the game anymore. Because that's always been my message, is I want everybody who is dissatisfied inside. You know how you feel. I want you to stop playing the game. Stop letting them move you like chessboard pieces. Fight back. I know it's hard because they threatened you. They've used fear-based science. They've done everything in their power to basically threaten you to go to work. And the fear of being homeless. We have homelessness crisis across the country now because people are being forced out of their jobs. And they didn't need to because the Supreme Court just basically said that what they did was wrong. And nobody's doing anything about it. So I'm let's say it's a gift and a curse to see that the school board out here has wised up and said, okay, you know what? We got to stop doing what we're doing. I'm disappointed it's temporary. I wish it was a permanent thing. And to understand, look, if these people are superstars and they can get it done and they're able to manage the workload and you pay them fair enough, let them work, let them do it. Then you judge them, you grade them, you measure them, and you test how successful they are. If you got somebody that goes in there that's always wanted to be a teacher and they're fresh out of high school, they can't afford to go to college, they can't afford to do it, let them try and then test them. And if they're a superstar, you promote that person. It doesn't matter what piece of paper you're holding. And it certainly doesn't matter what you did in your past job. It doesn't matter if you had a past job. None of that matters. In the grand scheme is, what can you do for me right now? Sell me on it. I will test you and measure you on it. And we go forward and we focus on the forward and the present and the forward. There's too much of a focus on the past. And the past does not define you. The past was what got you to the present, but the present is where you are now. And company B that I just now talked to doesn't need to care about my past. It doesn't matter. I know why they do, because they can't trust the data. So then what's the point of going through college and spending tens of thousands of dollars on college education if all you're going to do is care about the past employment? You're going to discriminate against those people that didn't have work experience. What's the point? What's the point of going through work, getting mentored, getting trained, getting developed, getting certifications, only to find a company you got 15 years experience and they'll shoot you down because you don't have a degree? So either you get shot down because you don't have a degree, or you get shot down because you don't have work experience. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of people's time. So I'm proud of anybody who stands up and says, no, I'm tired of playing this game. I'm tired of running the wheel. I'm tired of being a chess piece. And we're going to move forward and you will play by my terms. That means I want to work from home. This is the salary I want. This is the benefits I want. And if you don't do it, I'll find somebody who does. And I'll just keep looking and draining the system. It's unfortunate we have to be that way, folks. Honestly, I don't think we should, but it's necessary because it's the only way to get the businesses to play. They've got to come meet people halfway. Treat the employees as valued assets. And that's not what they're not doing, because for so long they've been allowed to abuse employees. I want to see that we get back to the world where they value employees and they're actually competing for you, as opposed to the other way around, where they're actually proactively offering. They get rid of the five different interview process. They're saying, we need one interview process. Well, the HR person and the hiring manager in the same room for 1 hour. We'll talk to you, make sure it's cool. After that, we'll issue an offer letter within 24 hours and get it done, because you're the first that met our needs, and we move it forward. Instead of the rat race it is today, where they're spinning people's wheels and making them wait for months only to not respond to them. And either they get ghosted or you follow up with them and it's like, well, they decided to go another way because they thought you were negative about your past employer and found some excuse to not work with you and not hire you, even though you were perfect for that role. So I'm saying all this to say, I want a world back where the employer is competing for you, not the other way around. The employee should have all the power. But our legal system, our government, our federal government has empowered employers to abuse workers. Then they pass the buck down to the worker because the worker is forced to pay higher taxes by the form of higher inflation. The higher inflation is something where you need to have more pay at the work, but the employer is not willing to do that. Or if they are, they're saddling you with work that's frankly crap none of this is fair. It's a rat race. It's running the wheel. Mouse running the wheel. I don't want to see it. So fast forward now. And as I'm processing out what that's doing, I decide to start the podcast. I went to contracting. I'm doing all these things because I need to decouple the dependency on somebody else to dictate what I do or don't do because it's not working. It's a waste of my time. I need to get to the point where I'm able to self-sustain at least to some degree. Cryptocurrency has helped me to some degree do this. And Basic Cryptonomics is our other podcast. I encourage you to take a listen to that one because it does have a lot of visitors over there. But Gentleman's World is something near and dear to my heart, to be able to speak straight from the heart and document the journey. Because at some point, I won't be able to document the journey. And I want to get it down before I lose that ability to document the journey properly and to be able to communicate as I'm able to do now. I'm pretty sure there'll come a time when I won't be able to communicate the same way I do now. And I want to make sure I put it at least to audio and paper. I have a paper source in the case of journal. So where anybody can listen and say, okay, we understood what he was saying. And at some point in the future, they'll listen back and say, he called it. He was right. We did need to get there. We either did or didn't. And if we do, great. If we don't, hopefully my message will resonate to somebody to help affect change on a wider scale. Now, I want to bring up a little bit of a personal note story because I think I haven't talked about personal note stories, but it's relevant to what I'm talking about here with this business of disqualifying, actively disqualifying. You know, when I was, after I worked at a telephony company. I don't want to give the name, but I worked at a telephony company in 1998. And that's where I bought that piece of garbage Ford Mustang. And after I left that company, I got into a rough spot and I applied for Staples. Now, just to put on the record, I've never worked part-time ever, never have. I'm pretty sure I never will unless I get like really old and I still want to work, which I doubt. But I've never worked part-time. I've always ever only worked full-time. So I get this opportunity at Staples. Now, with Staples, at the time, and again, this is an era before the internet was really a thing. So it's in, I'm pretty sure it was in the paper, and I apply, and actually, no, it was a walk-in, and I apply, and it was a pretty easy thing. They just had you go out. I forget exactly where it was, but they had you go way out. It was like a different city, I think, even, to do their orientation. And it's a bunch of us in the room, and they're talking about the position and all the great benefits and all the great stuff you're going to do, and they were going to assign you to a store. Now, they asked us what store you want to work at. And I asked for the store that is, it's south of where we lived down there, and I forget the name of the area, but it's en route to Plaza Bonita. So it's close to the 54 freeway. That was the store that I wanted. There used to be a Circuit City out there, and then it's a strip, Circuit City, and then the Staples at the far corner. That's where I wanted to be. That's what I asked for. These jokers assigned me to the Kearny Mesa store. Now, if you know, you probably don't, but San Diego's layout, there's a lot of sub-cities. They're not really cities, but they're like communities. So like Kearny Mesa, Miramar, Scripps Ranch, Santee is actually a city. You know, there's these subdivisions, but it's all San Diego County at the end of the day. Kearny Mesa, if I look at where I wanted to go, it would have been easy for me to get down to where I wanted to go. I could literally have walked there. Wouldn't have been fun, but I could have done so. That way, if I didn't have transportation, I could get there every time. Kearny Mesa is farther. At Kearny Mesa, I got to either take the bus, and then you got to do multiple connects. I think it was like bus to trolley to bus to bus. Like, it's a pain. It would have been like an hour. So this is where I bought the Ford Tempo. Little rinky-dink car. I believe it was a 97 Ford Tempo. No, 94. 94 Ford Tempo. Gray. And, okay, so then I'm like, fine. As long as I get a car, it is what it is. Initially, I was getting rides from my mom, but then I got the car, and I start this job. I get in there, and I had told them, okay, I want to work cashier in the computer section, computer parts and computer software, because I had that aptitude. So they're like, yeah, no problem. Okay, I get in there. They're like, okay, you're working stock room. What do you mean stock room? I asked for cashier. No, only the girls work cashier. And this is true today. If you go to most of these places, it's usually a female behind the counter, which drives me nuts. So I don't get to work cashier. I'm working stock. I get in there. There's like three other guys, all guys in the stock, all women at the cashier. The order, my day exists of some old lady would come in and she would ask for this desk. And it's a heavy desk. And when you go in the back, you got to pull it from the rack. So it's like you have to climb some stairs, pull it down from the rack. Well, these are like 200-pound desks. They're heavy. And I'm having to do it myself because the other guys are standing around talking about what happened in, you know, a fight or boxing, you know, NBA, NFL, something. They're talking some sports garbage, standing around doing nothing. And nobody's overseeing this. And I'm the one having to do the work because I'm the only one actually working. So I do this for like 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, I'm like, okay, screw this. And I quit right on the demand. After this, I'm working. I'm looking to for something else. And I'm out with a friend of mine. His name's Dale. And he was working. He was driving for MTS, which is their trolley system or a transit system down there. And he had gotten paid and he needed a ride and something happened with the car. He didn't have access to the parents' car because he didn't have his own car. And so I'm given a ride. We go down to, at that time, that Circuit City that's near that Staples. That's why I remember this. And back at the time, and people probably don't remember this now, but at the time, the big thing was, you know, DVD had just become a real big thing. We started seeing DVD players. The multi-disc DVD player started to be a thing and plasma TVs had just shown up. And they were $15,000, just to put in perspective. But they were beautiful. They were amazing TVs. It's just they were crazy expensive at the time. And then DVD started to get hot and heavy with this. Along with the DVD was this technology, and it was pretty much Circuit City that was pushing. You didn't see it anywhere else. It was called DivX. And DivX, there's two DivXs. There's the disc-based DivX, and then there's a codec, which is used to run movies on the software. I'm talking about the disc-based DivX. And the pitch behind this garbage was, you're basically renting the movie for cheaper. So you buy the disc, and for buying the disc, you get access to like a temporary play of the movie. You never watch it again. So then the disc becomes worthless. But it was this whole big thing because it was cheaper than renting. It was cheaper than going to Blockbuster Video or Hollywood Video at the time. It was just way cheaper. It's nothing like the streaming we've got today where you can just go to Amazon Movies, Amazon Video, and rent something for like $2. At the time, this was the only way that you could get the real dirt cheap. Is this DivX deal. And you didn't have to return the disc. You own the disc. That way, if you want to do it again, you just pay the money and there you are. So it was this whole big up-and-coming thing. It was like the new thing. They were advertising and Dell bought into this. And so he bought a bunch of these. And then he bought some regular DVDs and he bought a new player and all this jazz. He must have spent like $600 this trip. Okay, so then we're leaving the store. We're coming back and I remember the street layout and I could point it to you on a map, but ultimately anybody who's local to that area, who's listening to this podcast, we used to have a two-story McDonald's. I think it's still there. Two-story McDonald's on the corner of Woodlawn and something. And we always would go there for food. If you went up the hill and then past that two-story McDonald's, you would get to some residentials. And once you got to the end of it, there's a Jack in the Box right there on the corner. And then you make a, you either go straight and it hits you on the 54 or do you make a right and you can take the back road to get to this strip where it is, or you could use the back to get to 54 if it was faster. So I make, you know, I'm coming back the street way. I'm not coming back to 54 because I don't want to deal with traffic. I don't want to deal with nonsense. And I usually took the streets, especially if we were going to stop and get food, which we usually did. Usually we would stop and get Jack in the Box. So I'm coming back and I make that turn onto the street that's facing Jack in the Box. And now about, let's say a block away from the Jack. There's an apartment complex on the right and on the left, and it's a two-side street, and each side has two lanes. So I'm headed basically this direction towards Jack. All of a sudden, something impacts the side of the car, just totally T-bones the side of the car. I didn't see anything. He didn't see anything. And it must have hit really hard because we were totally jacked up. After we come to a stop, we get out and he's in total pain because here's the funny thing. He had his seatbelt on tight and I didn't, because at that time I chose not to wear a seatbelt because I felt like it would be more dangerous to do that than to wear it because of a previous accident. So I wasn't wearing a seatbelt and I was fine. He was in total pain because of his seatbelt had jacked his chest up. We get out and we're looking and there's this huge, I think it was a Cadillac, large, long Cadillac that had literally ran right into the side of my car that I didn't even see. I didn't see where it came from. I didn't see what the heck happened. And a couple of witnesses are starting to collect. We're looking around. I'm looking at the damage. My car's totaled. There's no going back from it. It's totaled. And it's amazing. It's amazing. You know, he was jacked up and I think it just barely missed him as far as the door. Cause it's like a T-bone, but I think it hit the rear more than him. It's my guess, but he couldn't get out. He had to come out through the driver's side door. because of the way that it impacted. You know, the witnesses coming around and they're saying, "Hey, are you okay? What the heck's going on? I just called the police and is everything all right?" And I'm looking in the car, there's no driver. So I'm like, "Okay, what the heck's going on?" Witness is like, "Yeah, he broke out. He broke out. He ran." "What do you mean he broke out and ran?" He ran down that way. And he points down where we came from. And okay, I don't know what the heck's going on. Police comes up. And so they're looking at the damage. They're checking on me. They're checking on him. What the heck's going on? And I just basically say, we were driving down the street. Next thing I know, something hit us from the side. I didn't see it because I wasn't thinking to look to the side because it's a straight. Like, it's not like we were running through a light or any of that stuff. It's just a straight residential thing where you wouldn't expect anything to hit you from the side at all. I come to find out, I was looking later, and turns out there is actually an exit there to get out of the complex, but it's assumed that you're going to make a left out of it, not go across the median over to the right. So now I'm like, okay, well, that happened. I got hit. Police officer looks under the car and he looks around. He's like, and he gets something from under the car. He's like, "Is this yours?" And I'm looking at it and it's a dime bag of Coke. Like, no, I don't know what happened. One of the witnesses, thank goodness, comes around and says, "No, I saw the driver. He threw that under the car. He threw that under his car out before he ran." Got me off because that cop was about to look at me strange because it's like, well, okay. Even though I didn't impact, I didn't do the front, I didn't do anything, it's like still, he was looking at me kind of twisted. So he, Dale, he's jacked up because he's still in pain after this. I think we still were able to salvage his stuff that he bought. I think the DVD player might have been jacked up, but he was able to salvage the stuff that he bought. But I'm perfectly okay. The car is totally totaled. Can't come back from this. And the moral of this was, you know, for me, this was a common thing. I would always do this. We would always do that drive. Either we went to the mall or we went to the strip to Circuit City, or we would go to Jack, or we go to two-story McDonald's, or we'd always go to these places. And I never took the time to stop and think about other people and what they were doing. And so now that I have a totaled vehicle, now it's going to be harder for me to do the work anyway. So as I had quit the job, so I don't have the money now. And now my car is totaled. Okay, now I'm kind of jacked up. And eventually I would get back on my feet. But it taught me to be a little bit more conservative about watching out for other people. That message I just said to you is going to be the preface for the next story I tell you. Hopefully this has been enlightening, informational, hopefully a little bit terrifying too, because it was a terrifying experience. And I want to get back to the world where everything's easier. Because things got harder. It was easier to think that, I could get a job and it's whatever, and then I could have a car and it's whatever, and I could go out and buy some stuff and it's whatever, and you take it all for granted, and then things happen where other outside factors beyond your control impact your ability to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.